Welcome to the Fundamentals of Relational Database Technology. In this presentation, I'd like to talk about the history or the condition of data processing before the advent of the relational model, what the relational model tries to address, and some of the foundational concepts. We're not going to talk about things like SQL or particular commands, DML, DDL, things like that. It's more just about how relational technology evolved from its theoretical foundations. And really, before we talk about that, we have to kind of understand what the computing environment in place was around 1970 or a little bit before. What we would see is that we have an environment where data storage and programming are very, very tightly coupled. Most of programming was done in a monolithic fashion. And when I say monolithic fashion, I mean that there were huge pieces of code, huge programs, and they would analyze the data. But the driving aspect was procedure. You would write the procedural code using things like flowcharts. And obviously, you were operating on the data, and the data was important, but the process really was the focus of the application development. So all the business rules, as a consequence, were contained in the code itself. That's where we knew how to, when in an if statement, what conditions to check for and how to branch. But one of the biggest problems was this idea of data redundancy and consequently data inconsistency. Okay, that was one of the big issues. Data redundancy would arise, and I suppose the best example would be the classic master file, transaction file, merge process, and then creating a new master file out of it. And the types of things we might see, for example, on an order master file, we get the order in, and the order would have customer information with it. So this order was order 15, and somebody bought a book from Barnes & Noble or some company, Amazon, just to use two of the better-known names. And, of course, they didn't exist then, but we're saying had they existed, this would have been an issue. And the customer information was carried in every one of the orders. So the problem immediately arose with this idea of redundancy. If Mo Howard was out buying lots of books and had created 200 or 300 orders, chances are that each order had the redundancy of Mo Howard's data in it, and the possibility, the distinct possibility, that the data could be inconsistent. In other words, if the data was out of whack, which piece of data should be considered the truth about Mo Howard? So that was certainly one of the driving things in the early days of relational technology. That was an issue that really was seminal in starting the whole process of saying, how do we address the idea of redundancy? Okay. In addition, the application code really required navigational logic to locate the data that it needed for read and certainly to update it. So there was a lot of overhead in the code of figuring out where the data was on the file that you were looking at. And that's another issue. Everything was in a file. A term most people use today would be a flat file, but it simply was a file structure. I'm eliminating from the discussion things like IMS, because I know folks who may have been familiar with the hierarchical data model of something like IMS, Information Management System, which was IMS or IBM's kind of flagship database. It was hierarchical, not relational. That still required navigational logic. The data was stored in a bit more consistent fashion. It did start to address the ideas of data redundancy, but not to the extent that data redundancy would be addressed in the relational model. Now, the relational model, probably the best place to start is with a fellow called E.F. Codd, who was a mathematician for IBM. And he published a seminal work in 1970 called A Relational Model of Data for Large Shared Data Banks. And he introduced a set of rules that would allow the elimination of redundant data storage. And it really was the beginning of relational theory. Okay. Modern RDBMSs such as Oracle and DB2 and SQL Server, MySQL, really have implemented that approach. They've really put it into action. Now, COD, and I probably should mention a couple of other names here. COD really is, I guess we could say, the originator or the father of the relational model. If we talk about data modeling theory, we would have to talk about Peter Chen. Okay, a slightly different aspect. It's all related to relational data modeling. But Peter Chen really did a lot of his work in data modeling theory. And of course, CJ Date did much of his work trying to standardize the SQL language. So probably those three names come right to the fore when we talk about who was instrumental in setting up the relational technology. So one of the things we'll see in that process or that time frame is that in the 60s and 70s, computational memory, was expensive. Computers required a lot of physical space. And a lot of the issues that were initially addressed by relational technology or the relational theory address these issues. And the question immediately comes to mind, well, if these particular issues don't exist any longer, why do we still have relational technology? Well, because we do have other benefits. Benefits being elimination of redundant data, reduction of anomalies, consequently. We don't have as many data anomalies. And we can enforce integrity rules. Okay. There's several types of integrity that we'll see in a few minutes that we would want to enforce, and their design or definition really arises out of the relational model. Okay. Now, to get back to COD, when COD really wanted to address this issue about data redundancy, and he published his work, he specified that the mathematical basis for relational database theory would be mathematical set theory. Okay. He also stated a couple of things in a theorem that the two primary languages for the relational database model, which he referred to as relational algebra and relational calculus, are precisely equivalent in expressive power. Okay. And when we talk about the language, obviously we're starting to get to the point of talking about SQL. So the relational database theory, it's based on mathematical set theory, but a couple of great benefits. One of the things is the actual representation of data is abstraction. I don't mean it's abstract data, I mean that it's abstracted from its physical storage. In other words, we don't have to really know about the physical location of the data. We interact with an abstract layer. The abstract layer, for the most part, is what we would call a table. DBAs certainly have to be concerned about the physical layer, but when people are writing code, we code it to go against a table and let the system figure out how to get the data. So when I say system, it's the RDBMS. What we're talking about is how much the RDBMS is doing for navigational logic. We've been pretty much absolved of having to do navigational logic to get to the RDBMS or to get to the data itself via the RDBMS. So data gets manipulated through this abstract model. One of the things about the abstract model is it tends to reduce this data redundancy. And by reducing data redundancy, it means this. Data is going to be broken into distinct non-duplicating sets. We can relate these sets in any number of ways for any number of applications. Easiest way of thinking about it is when we talk about sets, we can say that a set equals a relation, equals an entity, equals a table. Okay? Those are going to be synonymous terms for us. Okay? We can take it one step further and say that the things that live in the entity, the information about a set, we'll call those, we could say, attributes or fields or columns or data elements. We can use these, again, these are very loose analogies, but we can see how the data is being tied together. Now, the consistency of the data then is going to be increased by only storing the data once and allowing numerous views against the data. Okay. When we talk about data integrity, we can break data integrity down into we'll break it into five different types of constraints. We can talk about, for example, what column integrity is. And we'll say is type one. Column integrity means that if I define something as fixed character for two positions, that the data that goes in there must match the column definition. It can't go in there if it doesn't match it. We don't really think about column integrity because it's so ingrained. Once we have column integrity, though, we can talk about domain integrity. And domain integrity says this. If we have a column called state that we're going to say is fixed two characters, according to column integrity, XX is a valid state, but XX certainly is not a valid representation of a state. So we need to place additional restrictions. We have to say that the domain for the value of the state attribute would be only those states as recognized by the postal organizations. Well, in our case, the United States Postal Service. And it would be whatever two character codes are they use to represent each state and the territories. Then we have domain integrity. There's another type of integrity that's referred to as user or business defined, and that usually is a type of integrity where we might, for example, say that the values in column A of table A depend on the values of column B in table B. It's a little bit difficult to implement within the RDBMS itself, and usually what happens is that the user or business defined data integrity is specified in some architectural layer, some type place in the application layer, possibly maybe a database backend if possible. Okay. Now, that dealt with the integrity, different flavors of integrity involving a column or an attribute. And it may be more. User defined could be more than just a column. But then we also have entity integrity. Entity integrity basically says every entity needs a unique identifier, a primary key. So once we have a primary key, we have a unique way of identifying what we would call a row. Once we have that capability, we can access a particular piece of information. And the last type of integrity we would have would be what's known as referential integrity. If we have a primary key and we're doing data modeling, what we immediately are confronted with is what's the relationship between two entities. So for example, we have a customer and an invoice. We might make this statement. One customer can have zero invoices or many invoices. Okay, we might represent that as a one-to-many relationship. And what that means for us is that if we have a one-to-many between customer and invoice, and let's say we have invoice number or customer number as the primary key of the customer table, it means that we need to carry customer number as a foreign key on the invoice table or the invoice entity or the invoice set, whatever terminology we want to use. Because we can't adequately define intersection until we have a common piece of data. And that kind of a rule allows us to do things like joining the tables. Now we can find out what invoices are associated with what customer. Referential integrity, though, has a couple of sub-flavors to it. Three major ones are restrict, cascade, and set null. Without going into too much detail, what we mean by restrict, cascade, and set null is this. If I attempt to delete the parent row, that is, for example, I want to delete a customer and a customer has invoices existing, what should happen? Should the delete be constrained or restricted? In other words, we have to say if you have any invoices at all, if you only have one, you cannot delete the parent row. That would be one rule. Another rule would be cascade that says, well, if I'm going to delete the customer, I'm going to delete all the invoices. That may not make much sense in that type of a relationship because invoices may have meaning in and of themselves. A better example of a cascade might be to imagine that we have a customer table that also has a dependent for phone or email or address. In other words, a given customer can have many phone numbers, many addresses, many email addresses. And we might have a one-to-many relationship there. And in that case, we could say, well, if I'm going to delete the customer, the information about contact method really doesn't have any meaning in and of itself, so I will say delete the customer and cascade that delete into the phone table. In other words, delete all the phones related to that customer. The third major type, and we'll go back to invoice for this, is, for example, to say, when I want to delete a customer, okay, I can delete the invoices. We'll assume all the invoices have been paid and they've been taken care of. Okay. But I don't want the invoices to go away. I may want to keep invoices around because invoices may tell me things. For example, what type of article was purchased? I might use this, if it's a video store, we're renting videos, I might use this to say, I want to maintain information on this invoice. Three movies were rented. And those three movies, one was a Western, one was a horror film. It was any horror film we can think of, I guess. And another one, we'll say, is a comedy. Well, over time, I may want to know what types of films our customers are renting most frequently. I may want to use this for types of demographic research. So in that case, I would say, well, the customer can go away and we can break the association with the invoice table, but we don't want the actual invoices to go away. In which case, we can say, let's set the foreign key equal to null, or set it to null, since null really isn't equal to anything, it's a state. Well, now we have the concept of data integrity in place. We've said that sets don't utilize redundancy. Another benefit is that one of the things that was said is that all RDBMSs use SQL as their data access language. And when we talk about SQL, we are saying that anything that attempts to use it is a non-navigational language. When we say non-navigational, again, we mean this. We specify, for example, in a select statement, and that's one of the statements with the next SQL, we specify select this information from this particular table, or maybe a view, but good enough for our discussion to call it a table. It's a set. Select this information from a set where some condition is true. We don't navigate to it. We allow the database engine, what's called the optimizer, to determine the best way to get the data. Most DBMSs allow some type of hinting, but the point is that the navigational logic, one, is not something we have to actually code laboriously. It's not that we're not concerned about it. We certainly are concerned about it for performance reasons, but we want to be sure that we get the data we want. So we don't have to say, get the data doing this. Here's your navigational logic. So we can say SQL is non-navigational. So in wrap-up, this was a very, very brief introduction to the theoretical foundations of relational database technology. There's lots more of this information to be obtained. And if you'd like to hear more radio shows, simply go to the radio show section on gogo.com and look for the topic that interests you or look for the speaker that interests you. And that will conclude our brief overview of relational database technology. Thank you.